Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now kicking off Phase 2 with Iron Man 3. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we have a special guest for you today on the podcast as we talk down Iron Man 3, the star of the movie, Adam Pally.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We talked about this. We vetted this beforehand, and Adam said this is a very funny joke that I should say. Right?
No, I don't think any of that is the way that it went down.
We talked to everybody beforehand.
I'm glad that you get to witness the fact that he is an asshole. It's not always me pointing out that he's an asshole. It's nice to have other people.
I don't know Alex that well, so I can't really make an asshole judgment. I will say his on-air voice and his off-air voice are wildly different.
It's true.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Casey Kasem over here. Yeah, he turns it on.
Like when you came on, I was like, am I about to get the times that the movies are playing?
Press one.
It was a real shocker.
The full service podcast.
So Adam, you did appear in the movie as Gary the cameraman, and I will say, like, I remember seeing the movie. I was very excited to see you on screen. It was a standout scene there.
Yeah.
And
Tony needs Gary.
It got huge laughs in the theater. The first time I saw it was with the Marvel Friends and Family screening, which they had a couple of press folks at.
Yeah.
People loved it. It's a great scene. It's awesome. And I do want to talk about it in a second, just to give people ground rules for the podcast and a little bit of info, though I think all of you probably know this. What were you going to say, Justin?
Ground rules. I didn't know if we have never had rules before.
The movie was released May 3rd, 2013, directed by Shane Black, written by Shane Black and Drew Pierce. Box office dominated, came right after The Avengers. And if you haven't listened to those podcasts, we recapped all of Phase 1, one by one, so you can go back and listen to those. Same with this one. We're going to jump in and spoil the movie. We assume you've seen it at this point, but if you haven't, put this on pause. Spend 2 hours and 15 minutes or so. Watch it on Disney Plus, and then you can come back here. But Adam, back to you. So you do have the scene that is a crucial scene, but it's also a really funny scene where you are helping Tony get on the internet in your news truck so that he can find out information on the Mandarin, who we later find out is the fake Mandarin. What was the actual experience like on set, though? What was that, one day? Was that a week? How involved was it?
It was a week. It was about a week. They shoot at a different pace, and there's a lot of moving parts that you have to do. I think it actually ended up being longer than a week because the scenes outdoors, because it starts before we get in the van, there's a couple moments outdoors where there's like this long tracking shot where you see me on the front end, I'm on the phone and I walk past Tony, and then Tony walks all the way around the crime scene and I come back in. And that was like one of those like really ambitious Shane Black, like, you know, we're going to, like, there's no reason to do this in one. You know what I mean? Like we're going to do it in one. And so, and there's like, you know, 150 extras, and you're in North Carolina and it's like storming, and Robert's like got like a kind of a sprained ankle. And like, you know, it's like, it's just like hard to do all that stuff. I think it was like ended up being 10 days of shooting for that scene, which is like a lot for a little. But totally one of the most fun times, and as an actor, like one of the most fulfilling and best experiences.
I mean, just so many jokes in that scene. I mean, this movie in general, I feel like Shane Black gets to lean so hard into the comedy side of it and really like sort of having it drive different scenes as opposed to other Marvel movies, which sort of just have a one-liner here and there.
It's not my favorite Marvel movie. I think a lot of people would say that, but I think it is, it did give them a little bit of a blueprint that like, oh, we can do comedy. We can do straight up comedy movies. Like now, especially now they're in TV and their genres suffer like bending all this way. I think like Iron Man was Downey's biggest, like, I'm going to be funny throughout this. I'm going to like, and I think that's the plot, like Shane Black, when you put Iron Man on the run and he's trying not to be Iron Man, it's like, that's fish out of water comp. It's like, perfect for it. So I think it was just like the tone of the movie. And then Shane Black's movies, they're all Christmas movies, as this one is.
And they were pushing that throughout the whole
Christmas
thing. Like, remember,
he loves Christmas. Dude loves Christmas. But also, I think it's American. There's something like everybody knows Christmas, like the base of America. And I think in Shane Black's Christmas movies, there usually are a couple really funny standout cameos. And I think that, you know, it just kind of worked out.
So did they come to you based on your comedy experience? Was that, did they search you out? Was there an audition process? How did you end up getting the role?
I had been working for Robert as a writer for him for about a year, which is like one of those like showbiz secret jobs where they're like, that's not real. And then you get there and you're like, oh no, that's a real job. it was after my first year of Happy Endings, him and Susan, who has just been, they're the greatest people. Susan was a Happy Endings fan. And she called me in to meet Robert because she said we had a similar patter and we hit it off. And then he was developing an online persona at the time, which he's still, I have notes, but, and so that was my job, was to come in on days off of Happy Endings during the week to his Venice office on Abbot Kinney and write ideas for sketches that he could do and write banter for him if he had to present an award or something. And then other times we'd come in and he would just videotape the two of us improvising for like 5 hours at a time. And like, yeah, it was wild. And like, you're improvising and doing bits while a chef is like, gluten-free banana tartare. And you're like, what? Is it all banana gluten-free? You know,
what's hour four of that like, where you're like, all right, let's get a new suggestion? Really?
No, it's not like that kind of improvising. It's like,
oh, okay,
it's like consistent bidding. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, it's like, it's almost like a contest of wits and wills, where it's like, I want to see if you can keep up with my fast paced mind as long as I can the whole time. And I'm going to videotape it in case there's like a little nugget of thing.
Right.
So you end up doing a lot of bits where it's like, it's actually a lot, Justin. I mean, you know, you just produced my travel show. It's a lot like that, you know.
Yeah.
Except
it's like reps. It's like doing reps.
Yeah. It's like doing reps. Yeah. Yeah. It's like being backstage before the show for like 5 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And you're doing every character. You're like breaking out everything you can just to like stay, keep him afloat. And then you get a laugh and you're like, yes. So anyway, so I had been doing that job for 6 months to a year. And he left to do Iron Man, and I was still getting, I was still on the payroll, but not, but there was nothing to do because he was down, you know, doing Iron Man. And then I got a call from Joe and Anthony Russo, who at the time were set to take over. I think they had just done Captain America 2 or something, and they were becoming like the head people. And Joe was like, he's like, look, we got this thing. It's not a big deal. We want you to do it. But, you know, Kevin, he doesn't know you. So we're going to have to make you make a tape. But Robert's already signed off. It's not a big deal. You got to do his thing. And I was like, what? I was like, and he's like, and it was basically like, we're going to have John call you. John will walk you through it. And I was like, okay. And so then Favreau called me. And Favreau basically did the same thing. He was like, okay, listen, if a little thing.
You barely have to press record. Just stand in front of the camera.
He's like, everybody already signed off. I don't want you to be nervous. He's like, Robert already said it's you. Everybody's like, don't worry about it. Just make a tape. And I ended up making like 5 tapes.
Oh, great. Slight tweak. Great tape. Slight tweak. Just a couple tweaks.
Exactly. Exactly. Hollywood doesn't stop even like on that level. Robert called me and was like, want you to come down. So, you know, I flew down and the first couple days was just like getting acclimated to Marvel. Like it's very, it's different now because they have a real setup, a compound, right? Like I don't know how it goes anymore, but
yeah, it feels like it's full protocols and it's all like such long look stuff that it's like, here's the deal.
Exactly. And like even location wise, it's like, welcome to Marvel world. You know, like yeah, I feel yeah, like when I was doing it, it was still like, okay, we're shooting in North Carolina, you know, like it's a movie, you know?
Yeah.
That was pretty much how I got it. I wish it was cooler. I wish it was more like a big, like there were a lot of people that I beat out, but it truly was just like a Hollywood connection where Robert was like, this Jew works for me already.
It's you versus yourself and you almost blew it.
And I almost blew it a couple of times. And I had like the whole deck stacked for me. I had like the people producing it, gapped me in my first job. It was like nothing could have been better. And I still had to like barely get the job.
But at the same note, given that you had so many hours doing improv with Robert Downey Jr. offset, that's so much better than coming on set clean and then having to form this relationship in this truck and then suddenly you're riffing off of him.
Totally. And that was the most fun. It was like, truly the most fun was like for 6 months, you're just like in his house and he's being so funny and insane, and like you're seeing Robert Downey Jr. But then when I showed up and it was like first day shooting, and you know, he's in the costume, like with the thing glowing, and he's like, he's not joking around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like Tom Brady. No one can be late. Everyone's like on their mark. And then he does the thing that everyone says he does, which is you get the set. They hand you the sides. You go over to your mark. Robert goes, let me see those sides. Takes them. And he makes a big deal. He goes, let's talk.
Wow.
Let's talk. And you're like, okay. Luckily, I had read the sides, so I knew.
Give him a quick look.
What we were going to talk about. But he likes to do that. And Shane and him have such a rapport. I think they've done like 4 or 5 movies together. So it was like they had a rapport, and it was so much improvising. More improvising, I think, than I've done any other job, pretty much. Wow. Which is crazy because it cost the most per minute.
That said, there's also, I assume it was on the original DVD Blu-ray, but they also have it on Disney Plus as an extra. There's a whole extra 2 minutes of outtakes from your scene on there. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot. And Robert is like, he does this thing that I would tell more action people to do, which is like, if you're a really good actor, the plot stuff is truly secondary. And I think most actors who are action stars get caught up in the jargon of it. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, we need to put the satellite to get the thing and the thing and the fucking thing. It's like, and it's impressive how quickly they can like rattle it off. And Robert's like, shit about that. He'll really focus on like the jokes and the scene. And then that stuff is just kind of like, just blow through that bullshit, you know? But it, like, let's minimize it, make it as simple as possible. I don't want to deal with it. That makes the movies better to me.
We've seen that so many times. We get it. Like, we don't need all that anymore. We just want the fun stuff.
Yeah, and he knows that. And he knows that. And, like, he dances. He does that dance, too, where it's like, he knows what the fans are going to want. Like, you don't want to skip over, like, the cool glowing chest. But, like, you do want to skip over how Iron Man found the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like, that's, like, 2 seconds. Like, Jarvis, where is he? That's all we need. Because then you're like on a whole other thing, and he doesn't like doing any of that. So he really will be like, what's the simplest way for me to get this across? And then let's just do the funniest scene. And then like he almost does this like verbal cue where he tells you, okay, now we're going to do the scene. We'll be like improvising. And then he'll kind of put his hand on his shoulder and be like, hey, look, I need to like clip your wings for a second. And that's both Robert talking and Tony, because it's like, okay, now I'm talking about the plot, and Robert also being like, shut up for a second so I can remember what I have to say.
Yeah.
And it's very considerate and cool. And I really like, I told him this, I was like, I know you'll never do it again, but I would love to do a, like an improvised indie with you. He was he was like, who are you?
Yeah. Just so many scenes of him grabbing you by the shoulders and being like, okay, we have to get this boat into this harbor.
Not in my movie, man. In my movie, we smoke weed and look at the water.
Well, to that point, Justin, you were mentioning this earlier, but this is one of the big things that I think works about Iron Man 3 and why I enjoy watching this movie is it is so character-based and it is so comedy-based. Like, there's still huge explosions and big set pieces that happen throughout, and there's literal exploding people throughout the movie. But at the same time, it is about Tony. It follows his arc. It really finishes it off in a certain way by the end of the movie. And ultimately, that's why I think it's enjoyable. I don't know if you guys feel the same.
There are some really funny beats in here. And the scene in the truck, the Hispanic Scott Baio moment, is such a funny line. And it does feel like the comedy chops and that kind of moment is really kind of what you want in something like that, where it's like you've got the super fan and Tony kind of like sitting down, like the making fun of each other back and forth is just very much enjoyable. I mean, there's a ton of like really, you know, where Tony's screaming like, yeah, get over the giant bunny. You know what I mean? Where it's like, wait, what? There's a lot of like random hilarious stuff that kind of the action's over the top, but there's some things that don't hold up anymore, unfortunately, but you know, there's also some hilarious moments.
Yeah, there's some tough ethnic stuff in there, but it's a Shane Black movie, so you just gotta like kind of like understand that like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is basically a hate crime.
Yeah. True. Yeah. That movie was so funny at the time. And now it's like, oh, I feel a little bad.
Yeah. And like my favorite part of that movie was like people would be like, this is the movie that Robert Downey Jr. did to have the studios trust him. Right. That he could do family comedy. And then you turn that movie on and you're like, whoa, I can't watch this.
But I feel like Iron Man 3 is where like comedy and action feel like equal. The first Iron Man felt like it was a superhero movie that was funny at the same time. And that was like a revelation. The second one got a little self-serious. Everyone got a little bit in their armor pants a little bit much. And then this one, it feels like sort of a rebalancing, and that the confidence of Tony Stark moving out of this was, you just, it never broke stride after this.
Yeah. I think that they hit a little thing after this, which was like, we have to make sure that our movie, that our leads are funny. If they're not, we end up with, we have to, the plot has to be so important. So it was like, we were either going to make Captain America and Black Widow movies, or not Black Widow, Black Panther, and then Black Widow. The movies have to be in two camps. Superhero allegory for what that means for America and the American dream and all that stuff, or campy little boy drama. Right. And it's like, that's where they live, and they still live there. And the cool stuff is that Marvel has gone like, well, we can also do this and this and this and this and this. So there's like new stuff. But at that time, it was like, we have two options of tone here. Iron Man sucked when it got serious.
Yeah.
Well, I think the job that Iron Man 3 really needed to do was kind of cement things after the Avengers more than anything, because Avengers, we talked about this when we were talking about the movie, and everybody obviously knows this, but it was so far beyond, just in terms of box office, anything else in the Marvel Universe at that point, that Iron Man 3 came out and then also got $1 billion in movie theaters, sort of cemented as, okay, we're not going to get $200 million domestic. This is $1 billion globally. And that's what we're aiming for every time out of the gate. And to your point, Adam, I think that does lead to playing things safe some of the time. I do think now heading into this next phase, at least fingers crossed, I hope, with some of the stuff on Disney Plus has been taking chances, like WandaVision and Loki. Eternals certainly seems like it's taking some chances. So hopefully they're pushing out of that comfort zone a little bit. But
I thought Falcon and Winter Soldier took a lot of chances, because that's the one to me where it's like, that is in the serious camp because of those movies. Like the Chris Evans movies were not super filled with humor. They were filled with like Americana and American doubt almost, you know? Yeah. And so that's not super funny. And I felt like Falcon Winter Soldier was able to be like, yeah, it's not going to be funny. Like, and you're like, okay, cool, fine, forget it. Whereas like Loki still is in that story, like campy, you know, it has to be funny. And WandaVision, like, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah,
I liked it. It's impressive.
And it's funny you say it. I feel like with Loki, it almost feels like the comedy, it feels like the story ends up becoming much more of a thing in that, and the comedy feels even a little out of place by the end, where it's like, why is he being so weird now? When it really, it's like, oh, the story's me.
And I don't want to critique anything, because I don't know if anyone from Marvel listens to this, and I definitely don't want to get fired. But I preferred the first batch of episodes of Loki. But I think you got a little bit of that when you met the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really funny and brilliant. So I think like you got a little of that.
Well, and just back to Iron Man 3 for a moment, let's jump on some of the specifics about it. I think probably the big thing to talk about, the thing that people most talk about out of this movie, is the villain reveal, because you have multiple levels of villains, right? You have Rebecca Hall as Maya Hansen, the botanist / scientist. You've got Guy Pearce as Aldrich Killian, kind of the main bad guy, the quote-unquote real Mandarin by the end of the movie. And of course, there's the big reveal, which is Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin, but actually a British actor named Trevor Slattery, which I love. I loved when I watched that. I love just the twist and the swerve there. I think that's been really fractious for people. Some people absolutely hate it because they're expecting the real Mandarin to show up at some point. But I think it's just such a smart, funny thing. However, I will say rewatching it again last night for the podcast, it ruins the movie is too strong, but it definitely changes it when you watch it again. You're like, all of this is fake. It diffuses all of the danger from any of the Mandarin scenes, because you know he's a British actor being manipulated by Guy Pearce the entire time. At least that's how I viewed it.
It's funny. I disagree. I still liked it. I liked it more because it makes all the heightened sort of terrorist videos from the first half of the movie, they seem more insane now that you know, when you go in knowing they're fake. So I actually like, I think it's a great move. I'm curious how they're going to try to make the Mandarin real in the upcoming MCU. Or the Ten Rings, anyway.
Yeah, Is he the bad guy in Shang-Chi?
Yeah, the way that they're doing it for Shang-Chi is, I think it's Tony Leung is the name of the actor. He plays Shang-Chi's father, and they have some line in the trailer like, he's gone by many names, and one of them is the Mandarin. So they don't have rings. It looks like they're 10 large bracelets that he's wearing. I'm just going to throw that out there. Yeah, hard to criticize Marvel.
Rings, bracelets.
The way that they did it continuity-wise is the Mandarin was supposed to be the villain in the first Iron Man movie. They thought it would be too outrageous to throw a guy with 10 magic rings in there, so they punted it to the second movie. Second movie, they decided, we can't quite do this. There's a couple of references to the Mandarin and the 10 rings, but they ended up cutting most of them out. So this third one, I think that was probably the frustration that people felt there, is they were waiting three movies and they said, finally, we're going to get the Mandarin. And of course, you don't actually get the Mandarin. You get two kind of pseudo-Mandarins. Right after this, along with Thor the Dark World on DVD and Blu-ray, they released a Marvel one-shot called All Hail the King, which has Trevor in jail, and the real Mandarin is pissed because he co-opted his identity, so he gets kidnapped. That's going to be Tony Leung's part. I'm forgetting the actual name of the character in Shang-Chi is the short answer to that question.
Oh, that's the short answer.
That's the short answer.
The last sentence was the short answer.
The rest of it was the long answer.
Well, that's all very cool and boring.
They'll definitely use the long answer in the movie when they set it up, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the first half hour of Shang-Chi is just what I said, word for word.
Yeah, you're doing the narration, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
hi, everybody. It's me, Alex.
I would do your Casey Kasem voice for it.
Yeah, I would say you're using the wrong voice.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Here's a brief explanation of the Mandarin.
Fun. Oh. Fun for the kids.
Or white people.
Pete, what did you think about the Mandarin reveal and that whole plot line, all the villains in the movie?
Well, I think I agree a little bit with Justin. The second time watching it, was a different experience. The first time I remember being like a little let down by the reveal. And the second time around watching it, I was like, oh man, Ben Kingsley is having so much fun chugging beers. He like nods off in the middle of it. This is very enjoyable to watch. And it really kind of fits into the comedy of the whole kind of movie. So I kind of enjoy it a lot more the second time around. But yeah, I think it's a tough thing to kind of like tackle. So hopefully in Shang-Chi, it will be done right and with the right actor. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it because it's a badass villain for sure.
One thing that I thought was kind of interesting when I was looking into the backstory of the movie is Rebecca Hall's role, Maya Hansen, in the original draft was supposed to be the uber villain actually running things over Killian. Like she was the one who was ultimately in charge. So they sort of had these multiple layers there. But not Kevin Feige, but somebody in Marvel Entertainment, I'm going to guess it's probably Ike Perlmutter or somebody of that level, said, no, we can't have a female villain because that won't sell toys. And insisted that they had to change it to Killian, so that flipped and reduced Rebecca Hall's role, which is kind of wild. We talked about this with the Iron Man recap on that podcast. They couldn't sell toys when they were doing Iron Man. Like, they couldn't sell anybody on the idea of doing toys. So to go from begging people to do Iron Man toys for the first movie to the Iron Man toys dictating the plot of Iron Man 3, that's the arc of Marvel Studios, baby. That's how it works.
It's a dream. It's truly the dream.
The other things that I'll mention just about Maya Hansen's role, Gemma Arterton, Diane Kruger, and Isla Fisher were all up for Maya. Jessica Chastain was actually cast but had to drop out. And I don't know if this was the same part, but Amelia Clarke was actually cast in a role, but then her role was cut in the script stage, so ended up ultimately not doing the movie. So there's some fun casting facts for you. Let's talk about Harley. It's Harley, right? Not Haley.
Yeah.
Harley. What do you think about that? Because that's another interesting part of the movie when they travel over to Tennessee.
I think it's fun. Good kid. He's the therapy for Tony.
Yeah, it's nice because here we have Tony kind of like having panic attacks and dealing with stuff. And like the kid also causes them a little bit, but also saves them. So it's a fun comedic back and forth for sure. Like the way that this kid is able to hang with Tony is impressive. But yeah, when Tony calls him a pussy because his dad left, that's rough, dude.
Adam, what do you think about the Tennessee sections in particular, other than the fact that they delay getting to your character?
I don't have much. It's just like I'm waiting for kind of like a spark to the movie at that point. You know, like I'm like, this movie could use a could use a jolt. Like maybe in my head, I'm like, is there anybody who maybe is from like, I don't know, like network TV that like the audience knows, but like, it's also like, who's that again? Like, it's like getting growing familiar. Yeah.
He's got a different look. It's sort of vibe to him here.
Yeah. And then it's over and they're like, I want to see more of that guy. Like, that's what I was waiting for. But no, I guess the kid was fine.
Justin, what do you think about Ty Simpkins in the movie?
I think it's a fun piece. It feels like a relationship we don't expect. And so when they're hanging out and the scene where the kid's like, let me come with you. And Tony's like, fuck no. And it drives off. Like, that was such a funny sort of irreverent version of that, like, mentor mentee or like kid father figure relationship. I thought it was good. It was unexpected. This whole movie felt like it was unexpected in the way everything.
And it was also really interesting to see a kid take Tony down. You know what I mean? Like, Tony has to run away from this kid after like all these amazing fight scenes
and save him. He really went toe-to-toe with that extremist dude.
Yeah. There's actually a longer, I think it's like 4 minutes or so, there was, I don't want to say a whole arc because it's like three scenes, but that whole thing with...
I don't think we need to be so negative about three scenes. I mean, three scenes could sometimes be the most memorable part of a movie. You know, I think it's just about the way that those three scenes are handled. So. But anyway, go on. Yeah,
sure. So EJ, the bully, shows up on a dirt bike and is very mean to Harley. And then in the final fight with the water tower, he ends up getting drowned and almost dying. And Tony uses his arc reactor to shock him back to life as a defibrillator. Harley takes the arc reactor and puts it back into Tony after he almost dies. So it's interesting. I don't think the movie needed that. I think they got it out of the way with that one line where Tony says to Harley, hey, you know what we do with bullies? Like, that finishes it off. But it's interesting to see just as a different...
That would have been a wild side journey to
Well, particularly because Tony spends a lot of those scenes being like, EJ, get out of here, as if we know and care who EJ is at all. But another cut thing that I wanted to bring up that is super weird, and I'm glad they cut out of the movie. So Killian, with his extremist powers, we haven't really talked about the powers or where they come from or anything like that, but with his extremist stuff, one of the things they played around with is that he could exude pheromones. And there was this whole thing, I believe it didn't make it farther than the script stage, but where he used his pheromones to seduce Pepper, sleep with her, film it, and release a sex tape on the internet. And everybody was like, that's terrible.
Well, there's that weird kiss moment.
I like it when the comics get like a little too far.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's particularly weird about this, I remember, this is a very stupid way of saying this, but I remember I went to the bookstore before the movie came out. They released a bunch of like the novelization and the kids novelization and the I Can Read book. And the I Can Read book actually has a note of that, where they have Killian was using his pheromones to make Pepper interested in him, which is very strange. So if you want to check that out, World of Reading Iron Man 3, Iron Man Fights Back is your source for deleted scenes.
Yeah, you check that out, the next thing you know, the feds are at your door. They're like, what the hell have you been looking at?
I learned to read through some slight, light sexual harassment literature as well. Great way to learn some words that you use a lot.
I use these words a lot. No.
The one thing I did, additional thing Second I wanted to bring
rotation.
Up. Wow. And then I'd love to hear from you guys about some of your favorite scenes and moments from the movie. But I love that skydiving scene, the one where everybody's falling out of Air Force One. That's and intense, it was wild to me to find out, obviously, there was a lot of CGI in the scene, so it's not 100% real, but they used the Red Bull skydiving team and actually jumped out of a plane. So like that's actual people jumping out of a plane that then they CGI a little bit with the suits and everything, take out the parachutes. But that scene's so good. That's such a good, super tense, super creative action scene. That's a lot of fun.
It was really good. And I, it's a great time for me to announce, like, sorry guys, I'm leaving the podcast to join the Red Bull skydiving team.
Oh, I just want more for you, man. Live your dream.
Justin, bad news for you, pal.
What do you think? What do you mean?
I just think Red Bull's kind of focusing their energy in other places lately.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Well,
no follow-up.
I guess
questions.
That dream. I'll just choose a different beverage.
I just think that should be enough. A skydiving team that doesn't have enough resources, it's enough for me to be like, no, thank you.
I'm going to join the Lipton English breakfast tea skydiving team.
Well, that's actually better. That's actually better because the chutes are made of the bag.
And after you skydive, everybody has tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Steep it.
2 minutes steep.
Pete, you have any scenes you want to call out specifically that you enjoyed in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great moments. The giant, I really think Iron Man should have just like dove into that giant stuffed animal and then he would have been fine the whole way down as the whole building exploded because he had been in that the stuffing. But I think that... I mean, there's just so many really funny lines. Also, we got like a little foreshadowing of Tony's death in here, which is, I think, is important. And then like his establishment, the fact that he can't sleep when things are wrong, that is really played perfectly later in the Avengers movies.
What was the foreshadowing, Pete?
Well, that, you know, Iron Man's dead. You know, there's all these like, there's
oh, okay.
Newspaper, Iron Man's
very,
dead.
Very direct foreshadowing.
Exactly. Yeah. It was actually more of a shadow.
Yeah, it was a shadow. I like the you like that Westworld line. That was funny. I
mean, fun. Just being a human is a foreshadowing of death because all humans die.
I guess so. We're all heading there.
We're foreshadowing a lot of death on this podcast.
Today's deep moment brought to you by Lipton.
Kids die too.
Cool. It's your catchphrase for the movie.
That's like every time things are going well, I go, hey, let's not all forget. Kids die too.
That was hour five of your riff session with Robert Downey Jr. He's like, okay, we're good for today.
Oh, he handled it great. He was like, and babies.
Yeah. Wow. Natural heightening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good, Alex.
Thank you.
A couple things to call out. There's a little scene with Bill Maher in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he has gone on after to shit on comic books so hard, and I forgot that he was in this. And the fact that he was in this comic book movie, and he's taken such a hard line against him, I thought was
Bill Maher's cinematic career is quite fast, right? I mean, he's got this, and then he's got that movie where he was a pizza guy.
He's got a lot of variety in his reel.
Yeah,
it's really good. He sends it out, but he still auditions for a lot of roles.
I'm sure he does, actually.
I mean, all of that new stuff in there is weird and ethically weird. Obviously, Bill Maher is an extreme example of that because, like you were saying, he shits on this stuff. But Pat Kiernan, who has been in a bunch
New
of
York
movies.
One, you gotta let that
come
New
on,
York
New York
one,
one baby.
Pat Kiernan's the guy. What about, I mean, this is the Gary Shandling, you know, like the end of Gary Shandling in Marvel here, right? Isn't this his last role?
He's in Winter Soldier.
Oh, good for him. You know what is weird now looking back on the Avengers is like that phase one, they certainly didn't deal with consequences that much. They were kind of like, you're going to court and it's run by Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't that threatening.
Well, and I think that's what they're trying to touch on a little bit here in Iron Man 3. I think it's debatable whether it's successful in terms of the PTSD that Tony is dealing with. I really like that thread. It feels like the resolution to he feels a lot of PTSD about getting sucked through a wormhole in Avengers is he blows up an oil rig, which, again, I don't know if that necessarily resolves his arc, but I like at least that they tried.
Well, but I also think it's partially like he doesn't think he's a hero. He thinks it's the armor. And mm-hmm. so all the stuff where the armor is sort of working by itself and he's just controlling it. And then at the end of the movie, when he blows up all the armor, it feels like it's like, I am the hero. He's sort of taking the mantle.
Yeah, and he also takes his heart out and throws it in the water at the end there. You know, his symbolic heart.
Does he?
Well, his little chess piece.
He throws out his arc reactor?
Yeah.
Oh, at the very end. I thought
he got the shrapnel out.
Right. After he gets the shrapnel out. I thought you were, for some reason, talking about he does it on the oil rig. And then he's like, well, that's it for me.
But how does he keep it pumping?
He doesn't need it anymore. The arc reactor is a magnet that kind of keeps the shrapnel from moving towards his heart, right?
It's a lot of suspicious things with this. I don't know. In the
he
movies,
finally talked to a doctor and they were like, oh, no, we could just take
the shrapnel. Finally talked to a doctor? You don't think a doctor on the street would like see that and be like, that man's chest is, I gotta go look at that.
He has a big hole. There's a big
it's
hole.
It's a huge hole, and it goes right. I don't know how he kept that thing clean. Was
That's
he just hot peroxide every day?
So gross.
He can't walk around because doctors are constantly walking up to him, being like, oh my God, I could fix that. I could clear.
Yeah, doctors are constantly walking up to you.
All the time, doctors are walking up to me. They're like, I can fix that nose of yours.
I can lay off. Get
like,
out of
come
here.
On, doctors.
I can't afford it right now.
I'll take your card. Maybe I'll save up.
A doctor dyed your hair blonde that came up to you and did that, right?
Yes. It was a brain doctor. Well, initially it was for a closed skull brain surgery.
Oh.
And so the blonde makes it a little easier. They just make one small incision and then they can see it with the blonde. But when I got in, they said, hey, tumor's gone actually. So.
Huh. And congratulations.
I felt no need to double check, so I ran out of there with blonde hair, and it's been a really fun July.
Yes, they do have more fun.
Before we move on to our next section, though, any other notes, things from the movie you want to call out?
One of my favorite scenes.
I have a note too, but go ahead, Justin. Yeah.
I was going to say one of my favorite scenes is the A-teamy scene of him making the armor out of just household stuff. Very like MacGyver. There's a MacGyver episode that feels like exactly the same thing. I thought that was so cool.
That was great.
And Adam, what about you?
I just wanted to touch on the scene that, because I just love it so much. I don't know if we touched on it enough, but it's a scene where Tony finds the cameraman in his van. And I don't know if we've talked enough about that scene.
He has a moment. He really does.
The movie
have
really
a moment.
Does feel like it hinges on
this. I believe it comes at the exact middle point. Like they wanted to give it that crucial turning point
pivot.
In the movie.
Yeah.
And like a normal person would watch that scene. Like if they had any knowledge of screenwriting and stuff, and they'd be like, I'm not sure much information is being exchanged. Like this could be cut. But I guess that if you're watching it, you're like the energy and the acting is so strong. Let's leave it in.
A lot of the Iron Man fans are just like, where did he get the Wi-Fi to send that message? Like, just a lot of the fan.
Sort of. Right. And I've answered that question a ton that I had a Verizon.
Do people, all honesty, do people ask you about that? Like, do they point out holes in the scene in Iron Man 3 or never? Okay.
A lot of people don't ask me about Iron Man. to you nerds, maybe. But to the rest of the world, Iron Man is not the first credit that comes to mind when people recognize me.
Because I wanted to kind of like show that scene to my improv coach, and just because it's a mirroring exercise of like one actor being reflected into another one. It's really
who's your improv coach?
His name is Justin Tyler.
Yes, I'm doing a lot of one-on-one stuff with through COVID.
I don't think you should show that to Justin.
Okay.
All right. I don't know why you would. We talked about it for nearly 45 minutes.
I just wanted to say the extra credits thing with, you know, Dr. Banner being not that kind of doctor because he doesn't have the temperament was hysterical and worth the wait at the end of that. And I thought it was a fun way to end the movie.
It's funny they did a pure comedic post-credit as opposed to having some weird reveal.
Well, the Avengers did that too, right? With the burritos?
The shawarma.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was originally a plan, or at least what Marvel wanted to do, was have a post-credits of Iron Man flying off into space and meeting the Guardians of the Galaxy. But Robert Downey Jr. said, I don't know if I'm coming back as Iron Man because my contract is up. So let's do this scene instead, which I honestly think was very smart. If I remember back in the day, people loved Mark Ruffalo and Robert Downey Jr. together in Avengers. There was the whole Science Bros thing that was coming out. So it seemed really well timed to have that post-credit sequence because it kind of played off of that very fun fan thing. And I don't know. I like having an understated comedic.
I would love to see like a buddy action comedy with the Hulk and Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Like a little prequel action.
That'd be great.
Then so maybe like right midway, a sweet cameo by the everyone's favorite van guy.
Yeah, we have to recast.
Oh, because you're blonde now?
Because I'll be playing one of the third scientists.
a random scientist.
I will say Drew Pierce is one of my close friends. And I do, if you were to look at Drew Pierce's inbox, it's a bit, but it's also real. Every month, like, I try to write a full email that's like, people want a Gary solo movie. They want it. And you're the guy to do it. And then recently, he wrote back to me, I actually like this idea, but you need someone who's passionate about the character. And that's not me.
That's good.
You created the character, you son of a bitch.
Well, hopefully you get the patented Marvel Vision bub and we'll make it happen.
I think it's coming.
Yeah. Oh, I did want to mention just real quick, because there is a wild cast in this movie, even beyond you, Adam. There's you got James Badge Dale as one of the villains, which is kind of crazy because he's like this very serious method actor on TV. And suddenly he's just chewing gum and blowing stuff up. You got Yinsen from the first movie briefly shows up. You had to love that, right, Pete?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Sean Tube. Miguel Ferrer shows up as the vice president very briefly in like two scenes. He's a great actor.
Arrested at the end.
Also, I hadn't noticed this the first couple of times through, but Corey Hawkins, who people probably know now as Benny from In the Heights, shows up as like Navy soldier who's looking at a computer and is like, uh-oh, he's on the move. And that's pretty much his line, which is kind of interesting.
I hate to nitpick here, but that last segment felt like a real direct attack on my on my IMDb star meter. Oh, I mean, you went a lot of other interesting people.
Less interesting. I should have said less interesting actor.
And we will be linking to everybody's IMDb star meter after this to really see the rankings.
I mean, what a ego hit, Justin. I mean, who was the other interesting person that you saw? Who was it? Charo? Who did you say?
This guy who said that there's a beep on the scanner.
And who was that?
Hawkins.
Corey Hawkins, of course. Oh, and here's my favorite. It's another interesting actor. I think everybody here would be surprised to know. James Badge Dale. What? What the fuck are you talking about? What is James Badge Dale?
Didn't even get to Fan Bing Bing.
Man, Bing Bing. What the hell are you talking about?
That one's made up. To be fair, that one's made up.
No, Fan Bing Bing.
Fan Bing Bing sounds less made up than James Badge Dale.
Yeah. Fan Bing Bing isn't the only Chinese cut of the movie. This is not even a joke. It's true. There's a whole Chinese cut of the movie.
I just like don't understand why you needed to use me as a segue to that, being like, likening me, your guest,
to the other
James in Badge your Dale. Name's like randos. That show up. You might as well be like, here's another person just like Adam on Adam's level that was in the movie. This guy actually left the set and hit a family with his car and went to jail. You probably remember that story. Anyway, he's in the movie too.
Yeah. And his IMDb star meter up very high. Just recently.
I mean, Jesus. Come on.
He's an Eternal. I believe he's an Eternal.
Here's how you want to know who else is in the movie besides Adam Pally? Guy Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Robert Downey Jr.
Well, yeah, that's a given.
Don Cheadle. That's the level that we should keep it at.
Yeah, that's the cast.
Don Cheadle had like a whole Die Hard moment in this movie.
Yeah,
it was great.
Don Cheadle, Adam Pally. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be like, you know, oh yeah, it's a huge, weird, weird cast. Adam Pally is in it. The guy that sells the spicy melon underneath the mega underpass.
This has been our recurring segment, The Island of Misfit Toys, featuring Adam Pally.
Featuring our guest.
All right. Well, I'll definitely edit this portion of the podcast out. Let's move on.
Alex, I think you've been doing too much research. Is that even possible?
Alex, do you think there's a more interesting part of the podcast than what just happened?
Hey, guys. Hope you enjoy our 1 minute long podcast. All right. Very briefly, before we wrap up here, let's go to the vision board. We talked about some of
these
stuff.
You guys are talking to James Badge Dale next.
He's on. We got
to
wrap this up.
Let's welcome him into the stream.
Here we go. We talked about Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings a little bit. Big question, I think, and this is still weirdly an open question, but will there ever be an Iron Man 4? And the reason I bring that up is a lot of people questioned that immediately after Iron Man 3. Of course, we saw Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man in a bunch of different other Marvel movies. But now we know they are working on a Captain America 4 with Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson, Captain America. In my mind, at least, it seems like a little bit of a possibility with somebody new in the role. But what do you guys think? Are we ever going to see Iron Man 4 at any point in the MCU?
Well, you are seeing Iron Heart, which is like, I think, going to take over that part of the story. So I think that the character, I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing the character will have all the characteristics of Tony Stark and will become the new like center of the MCU, right? Isn't that the plan?
I think we'll see that. That's Riri Williams. That should be really good. And then there's also Armor Wars, which is going to focus on Don Cheadle kind of picking up after the wreckage left behind by Tony Stark dying.
Well, with all this Kang stuff, I feel like we are going to have an Iron Lad, and I think that could lead to
another. Who's Iron Lad?
Explain it really simply, Justin. Go for it. So in the Young Avengers, Iron Lad is the sort of leader, and we find out later in the comics that it's actually Kang who was just introduced as the villain in Loki. Spoiler for Loki. So if they introduce Iron Lad, it will be like a young Kang, essentially. And I could see that becoming, if it sticks, Iron Lad sticks as a hero, could become another Iron Man.
This is where I think they should take a little page of the DC book, which sounds crazy. But like, I don't need new Iron Men in my life. Like, I would like a better movie at a smaller event of our Iron Man. You know, like, I think that they should go micro instead of macro in a lot of these. And that way you can bring these characters back. I think it would be good to do a Hulk Iron Man movie.
And I think to get RDJ back, I think that would be the move.
So like, that's the way,
a prequel,
yeah.
That's a fun, like a but road
it
movie.
It
doesn't
have to be a prequel. It's just like make a right turn about something that happened in the small universe there. Use the comics. You know, maybe it is like a young cameraman gets some footage of Tony doing something he doesn't want to be doing, and then they have to chase him down, maybe. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have a couple of ideas.
Yeah, the armor ends up on him. The armor somehow ends up on him.
Just maybe a guy that's super good at tech, and does carry a Wi-Fi brick around. You know, so he's able to.
You could use a tagline like, "He's got great internet speed." Something like that.
That's
sure.
I didn't walk away from the Gary scene being like, "That guy's great at tech."
Oh, really? That's interesting, because that's the opposite of what a lot of people said.
Oh, interesting. Well, give us into the character backstory. Is he like a MIT grad? Like, how did that, how did he end up in that van? Talking to his mom extensively.
Self-taught. The character, actually, I don't know if you could tell this, but as a child, was in a horrible car crash. And spent a lot. Yeah, and so had to go to a special school where they had to reteach him how to walk. He didn't have a lot of friends. And so he spent a lot of time with his mother and on his computer. And because of that, he ended up using his skill to find a job that was able to kind of put him right in the center of the action, which is something he never really got a chance to do. Wow. He was like looking at it through a rear window.
Sort of like a young Elon Musk.
I'd love to see this.
Yeah, totally. And his hero is the guy who could do it all, you know? And he thought, man, if I could just do it all, he was sitting in that wheelchair the whole time, I could just do it all, right? And then he thought, well, I got out of the wheelchair, just like Tony would have. I know how to watch things. I've been watching a lot of TV. So he grabs his camera, his phone, started taping stuff, sending it into the local news. Pretty soon they go, hey, Gary, you're really good at this. Why don't you come work for us? He goes, I don't know, I live with my mom. I take care of her. She's pretty sick. She's been taking care of Gary her whole life, you know. And they had an alcoholic father who beat her.
They both had alcoholic fathers.
Super. Yeah, that's tough when you have an alcoholic father and then you marry an alcoholic and then your son has an alcoholic father. There's a lot of alcoholism in the family.
Well, and there's the whole demon in the bottle storyline from Iron Man that they've never really done. So this is a direct adaptation.
And then what happens one day at Gary's job? He meets Tony. And what does Tony tell Gary? Tony needs Gary. Wow. And that's all Gary needs to say that America and the world need Gary too.
Wow.
Drew, where's you? Well, Drew, this. Where are you at? There's a whole story here, Drew. Right?
This is not a movie. This is a Disney Plus series. This
Why?
Is a.
Why? Well, fuck you. You know what? Oh. I can carry a movie. Why? Because I'm a TV actor.
No, fucking it's movie bigger. Star. More people will see it.
Oh, come on. I want my.
They
movie.
Got over 100 million subscribers, Adam.
Oh, $100 million.
Movies are dying. They're dead. No, theaters are no. dead. No. Nobody's going back to theaters.
Movies, this is the greatest day of my life.
Movies are growing. Now's the time. Movies and travel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nice. Businesses you want to be in right now. Movies, travel, and the theater.
The theater. And I feel like in this movie needs sort of like another Gary, sort of like Justin, the PA, who
Definitely.
Has a facial hair like Gary, that's like Tony wow. Stark. It's like a generational.
That's so funny. That's such a funny idea because then Gary can treat Justin like Tony treated Gary.
Yeah.
We should get Justin Long.
Yes, he's
That'd be great.
He'd be perfect.
He'd be great. He'd be perfect.
All right. Well, if you need a narrator to recap the whole thing at the beginning of the movie for like half an hour or so, I'll keep it really brief. Just
I don't think they do that.
No. I was just throwing it out there.
Yeah, but that's you know that they don't do that.
Okay. Just send 5 tapes to Pally, and he'll let you know.
You know, I'll go through your narrations. Justin, write up a script. Keep it real racist. No problem.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you about this role. I'm looking forward to the movie version of Gary, not the Disney Plus series. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube coming out. We would love to chat with you about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Twitter!
ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Wow. Gary for life!